University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Session, 2007. English as a Second Language. Paper 3. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your centre number, candidate number, and name on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher now. The tape will not be stopped while you're doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the tape back on. Now you are all ready. Here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are 6 questions in this part of the exam. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Part 1. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. Akim needs help in locating a book in the library. Where exactly will he find it?
I'm looking for the IGCSE History Revision Guide, please. Can you help me?
I'll have a look in the catalogue. Yes, it is on the shelf. Look in section 807, and you will be sure to find it among other similar books.
I'm looking for the IGCSE History Revision Guide, please. Can you help me?
I'll have a look in the catalogue. Yes, it is on the shelf. Look in section 807, and you will be sure to find it among other similar books.
Question 2. Amelie wants to use the college computer. Which 2 items must she provide in order to do this?
Could I use one of the computers, please?
Yes, there is a computer available. You just need to show me your student identity card, and of course you'll need your password for the computer.
Could I use one of the computers, please?
Yes, there is a computer available. You just need to show me your student identity card, and of course you'll need your password for the computer.
Question 3. Johan and Max are discussing the evening. Why have they chosen a good day for the cinema?
What should we do after we've been swimming this evening? Shall we go and see that new film, Max?
No, it's too expensive, Johan.
No, I don't mean at the cinema in town. The Arts Centre offers a 25% student discount for every performance. And today's Wednesday, so it's also 2 tickets for the price of 1. What should we do after we've been swimming this evening? Shall we go and see that new film, Max?
No, it's too expensive, Johan.
No, I don't mean at the cinema in town. The Arts Centre offers a 25% student discount for every performance. And today's Wednesday, so it's also 2 tickets for the price of 1.
Question 4. Natap plays the trumpet and is to tour with his college orchestra. Why must he arrive at the departure point early?
So, we'll be away for 10 nights and we'll play 6 concerts, as well as having full-day rehearsals, so it will be quite tiring for all of you on tour. The coach leaves from the college car park at 6 a.m, but don't forget, you need to be here 30 minutes before that in order to load your instruments safely into the separate trailer. So, we'll be away for 10 nights and we'll play 6 concerts, as well as having full-day rehearsals, so it will be quite tiring for all of you on tour. The coach leaves from the college car park at 6 a.m, but don't forget, you need to be here 30 minutes before that in order to load your instruments safely into the separate trailer.
Question 5. You are travelling to King's Bridge and are in a hurry. Where and when will you find the best train for your journey?
Passenger announcement. The stopping train service to King's Bridge will depart from platform 9B in 5 minutes' time. Passengers wishing to travel direct to this destination should wait for the express service, which will be arriving on platform 9A in 12 minutes' time. Passenger announcement. The stopping train service to King's Bridge will depart from platform 9B in 5 minutes' time. Passengers wishing to travel direct to this destination should wait for the express service, which will be arriving on platform 9A in 12 minutes' time.
Question 6. Samir is using the washing machine at the laundrette. Which 2 further steps must he take to make the machine work?
Excuse me, could you help me, please? This machine has a flashing red light when it should be washing my clothes.
Let's see. First, choose your type of wash. You want general wash. And then press the green button. That gives you the red light. The next step is to insert the correct change, £1.50, and finally press start. If the machine displays a yellow light, press reject and start again. Simple.
Oh dear, I'll try again. Excuse me, could you help me, please? This machine has a flashing red light when it should be washing my clothes.
Let's see. First, choose your type of wash. You want general wash. And then press the green button. That gives you the red light. The next step is to insert the correct change, £1.50, and finally press start. If the machine displays a yellow light, press reject and start again. Simple.
Oh dear. I'll try again.
That is the last question in part 1. In a moment you will hear part 2. Now look at the questions for part 2, exercise 1. Part 2. Part 2, exercise 1. Question 7. Listen to the following interview about chocolate and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Good evening and welcome to Food Weekly. Tonight's programme features some new healthy recipes and suggests ways of reducing salt and sugar in our diet. The surprise is that many of these ideas use chocolate as an ingredient. Chris Chang, the leader of the Campaign for Real Chocolate, is in the studio to talk to us. Chris, chocolate is good for our health. True or false?
True, of course. But it does depend on which type of chocolate you buy and use in your cooking.
We'll come back to those details. But first, tell us about your role as leader of the Campaign for Real Chocolate.
I have loved chocolate ever since I was a young child. I grew up in a large family and loved traditional family celebration times, where we might be given gifts of chocolate bars or sweets or chocolate eggs. I'm a dietitian now, and I realised that the chocolate we buy all too often is made from sugar, fat and milk, and is sold as a family chocolate bar. Of course, it just tastes sweet, nothing like real chocolate should taste.
So you've taken action to promote good chocolate?
Yes. In 2001, I founded the campaign to speak out against chocolate manufacturers who argued that adding fats and sugar in the production of chocolate was acceptable and, of course, cheaper. Actually, chocolate should only be made with cocoa and cocoa butter.
Oh, so how will we know which is the good chocolate when we buy a bar?
Read the back of the packet. Good dark chocolate will contain only 30% sugar, while the lowest quality chocolate contains as much as 80%. Poor quality chocolate will also only have about 5% cocoa on its list of ingredients, whereas the best will have between 50% and 70%.
Why is it important for the makers of chocolate to use cocoa butter in their chocolate and not vegetable fat?
Because cocoa butter is a unique fat. It's what we call a saturated fat, but it behaves like an unsaturated fat, which means it's good for you. It has been shown to reduce blood cholesterol levels.
So good chocolate really is good for our health?
Of course, but only if the chocolate is good quality and made with the correct ingredients. Remember, real chocolate has high percentages of cocoa butter and cocoa, not sugar and vegetable fat. If made correctly, the chocolate also contains a multitude of vitamins and minerals and has antidepressant effects.
You mean it makes us feel happy?
It can certainly make you feel more positive. It also helps to stimulate the brain.
Can you tell the quality of a piece of chocolate by tasting it?
Oh, yes. And so can you. Try these simple steps. The chocolate will smell good. It might remind you of fruit or wood. When you break the chocolate, it should appear reddish in colour. This shows us how much cocoa is in the bar. The redder it looks, the higher the quantity of cocoa used.
Good. Any more tips?
Yes. The chocolate should make a distinct snapping sound when you break it, and it should melt easily. Cocoa butter itself melts at 34 degrees Celsius. Finally, of course, it should taste smooth and delicious.
Lovely. Chris Chang, thank you very much for your advice. We'll all know how to search for and recognise real chocolate now.
Good. Remember that real chocolate is good for you, and enjoy eating it.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good evening, and welcome to Food Weekly. Tonight's programme features some new healthy recipes and suggests ways of reducing salt and sugar in our diet. The surprise is that many of these ideas use chocolate as an ingredient. Chris Chang, the leader of the Campaign for Real Chocolate, is in the studio to talk to us. Chris, chocolate is good for our health. True or false?
True, of course. But it does depend on which type of chocolate you buy and use in your cooking.
We'll come back to those details. But first, tell us about your role as leader of the Campaign for Real Chocolate.
I have loved chocolate ever since I was a young child.
I grew up in a large family and love traditional family celebration times, where we might be given gifts of chocolate bars or sweets or chocolate eggs. I'm a dietitian now, and I realised that the chocolate we buy all too often is made from sugar, fat and milk, and is sold as a family chocolate bar. Of course, it just tastes sweet. Nothing like real chocolate should taste.
So you've taken action to promote good chocolate?
Yes. In 2001, I founded the campaign to speak out against chocolate manufacturers who argued that adding fats and sugar in the production of chocolate was acceptable and, of course, cheaper. Actually, chocolate should only be made with cocoa and cocoa butter.
Oh, so how will we know which is the good chocolate when we buy a bar?
Read the back of the packet. Good dark chocolate will contain only 30% sugar, while the lowest quality chocolate contains as much as 80%. Poor quality chocolate will also only have about 5% cocoa on its list of ingredients, whereas the best will have between 50% and 70%.
Why is it important for the makers of chocolate to use cocoa butter in their chocolate and not vegetable fat?
Because cocoa butter is a unique fat. It's what we call a saturated fat, but it behaves like an unsaturated fat, which means it's good for you. It has been shown to reduce blood cholesterol levels.
So good chocolate really is good for our health?
Of course, but only if the chocolate is good quality and made with the correct ingredients. Remember, real chocolate has high percentages of cocoa butter and cocoa, not sugar and vegetable fat. If made correctly, the chocolate also contains a multitude of vitamins and minerals and has antidepressant effects.
You mean it makes us feel happy?
It can certainly make you feel more positive. It also helps to stimulate the brain.
Can you tell the quality of a piece of chocolate by tasting it?
Oh, yes. And so can you. Try these simple steps. The chocolate will smell good. It might remind you of fruit or wood. When you break the chocolate, it should appear reddish in colour. This shows us how much cocoa is in the bar. The redder it looks, the higher the quantity of cocoa used.
Good. Any more tips?
Yes. The chocolate should make a distinct snapping sound when you break it, and it should melt easily. Cocoa butter itself melts at 34 degrees Celsius. Finally, of course, it should taste smooth and delicious.
Lovely. Chris Chang, thank you very much for your advice. We'll all know how to search for and recognise real chocolate now.
Good. Remember that real chocolate is good for you, and enjoy eating it.
That is the end of Part 2, Exercise 1. In a moment you will hear Part 2, Exercise 2. Now look at the questions for Exercise 2. Part 2, Exercise 2. Question 8. Listen to the following interview about tanzanite, a mineral found in Africa, and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello, and welcome to our series on Rocks of the World. Even in ancient times, writers stated that there was always something new to be found in Africa. Here is geologist Bertolt Bach to tell us about the latest find from a mine near Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania.
Hello. Yes,
The world's biggest lump of tanzanite, so-called because of the country of its origin, Tanzania, has been found 270 metres below ground.
I've never heard of tanzanite.
It's the newest precious stone, and people love its appearance because of its deep blue colour. It's perfect for use in jewellery, for example. Blue gemstones are, after all, rare.
Does it have the same status as a diamond, then, do you think?
Tanzanite is considered fifth in importance after diamond, emerald, ruby and sapphire.
So, is it really new?
Fairly. It was discovered in 1967 by Maasai tribesmen, and its only source is an area of about 13 square kilometres in the mountains in the north of Tanzania. Tanzanite is actually rarer than diamond, so you can imagine the excitement of the Tanzanian miners who uncovered this huge piece of tanzanite.
Mm. How large is it exactly?
It's the size of a building brick and weighs more than 3 kilograms, enough for 30,000 rings or pieces of jewellery.
It must have a huge value.
Mm, about $15 million.
So why is tanzanite blue? Is it something to do with the minerals in the soil, in the area of the mine?
In its natural state, this precious stone is grey or brown, but it turns blue when heated to 300 degrees Celsius. Originally, the Maasai tribesmen discovered examples scattered over the ground. The rocks had been turned blue by the heat of bushfires, which had been started by lightning. Miners often bring out this blue colour themselves by baking the mineral after first wrapping it in dough.
In dough? Bread dough, do you mean?
Yes, it protects the tanzanite.
Ah. So what will happen to the latest huge tanzanite rock?
It's to be displayed in various museums and eventually will be cut up to be sold. Look out for the Mawenzi Tanzanite exhibition in your own country. The mining firm which found the rock has named it Mawenzi after the second highest peak in Tanzania.
Oh, why didn't they name it after the highest mountain in the country?
Because one day a lucky miner might dig up an even larger piece of tanzanite. Oh.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello, and welcome to our series on Rocks of the World. Even in ancient times, writers stated that there was always something new to be found in Africa. Here is geologist Bertolt Bach to tell us about the latest find from a mine near Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania.
Hello, yes. The world's biggest lump of tanzanite, so-called because of the country of its origin, Tanzania, has been found 270 metres below ground.
I've never heard of tanzanite.
It's the newest precious stone, and people love its appearance because of its deep blue colour. It's perfect for use in jewellery, for example. Blue gemstones are, after all, rare.
Does it have the same status as a diamond, then, do you think?
Tanzanite is considered fifth in importance after diamond, emerald, ruby and sapphire.
So, is it really new?
Fairly. It was discovered in 1967 by Maasai tribesmen, and its only source is an area of about 13 square kilometres in the mountains in the north of Tanzania. Tanzanite is actually rarer than diamond, so you can imagine the excitement of the Tanzanian miners who uncovered this huge piece of tanzanite.
Mm. How large is it exactly?
It's the size of a building brick and weighs more than 3 kilograms, enough for 30,000 rings or pieces of jewellery.
It must have a huge value.
Mm, about $15 million.
So why is tanzanite blue? Is it something to do with the minerals in the soil, in the area of the mine?
In its natural state, this precious stone is grey or brown, but it turns blue when heated to 300 degrees Celsius. Originally, the Maasai tribesmen discovered examples scattered over the ground. The rocks had been turned blue by the heat of bushfires, which had been started by lightning. Miners often bring out this blue colour themselves by baking the mineral after first wrapping it in dough.
In dough? Bread dough, do you mean?
Yes, it protects the tanzanite.
Ah. So what will happen to the latest huge tanzanite rock?
It's to be displayed in various museums and eventually will be cut up to be sold. Look out for the Mawenzi Tanzanite exhibition in your own country. The mining firm which found the rock has named it Mawenzi after the second highest peak in Tanzania.
Oh, why didn't they name it after the highest mountain in the country?
Because one day a lucky miner might dig up an even larger piece of tanzanite.
That is the end of part two. In a moment you will hear part three. Now look at the questions for part three, exercise one. Part 3. Part 3, Exercise 1. Question 9. Listen to the following interview with an astronaut and then indicate whether each statement is true or false by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello and welcome to Science File. Today we are pleased to have astronaut Paul Ryder in the studio. Paul, you've made world history, haven't you?
Yes. I'm known as the astronaut who repaired the space shuttle Discovery while on a spacewalk. I was 223 miles above the Earth at the time, and I performed the first external repairs to a spaceship in orbit from the outside.
I saw you on television. You were in the news headlines.
Yes, I was being watched by a live television audience of millions back on Earth as I carried out the unexpected repairs to our damaged space shuttle. The shuttle was attached to the International Space Station at the time, and our team had been in the middle of carrying out a program of research and experiments in space.
What did you have to do? Were the repairs to the spacecraft very complicated?
Oh, no. I had to extract two pieces of tile, which had been damaged and were hanging loose from the underneath of our spacecraft. If they'd been left in their damaged position, they might have overheated the whole shuttle on re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere.
Did you realise the importance of your spacewalk at the time?
Oh, yes. I knew the implications if I failed, but I tried not to think about that. I concentrated on my mission to repair.
Did you have any help?
My co-pilot helped me from inside the shuttle. He manoeuvred the 50-foot robotic arm, which held me securely in space.
It stopped you from floating away.
It certainly did. I was only outside for 44 minutes, and the actual repair took seconds to carry out. Most of that time was spent getting into the right position underneath the spacecraft. I had to be careful not to touch the spacecraft with my helmet or feet. In fact, the only contact was with my fingers as I extracted the two tiles. One false move, and the delicate tiles which cover the spacecraft could have been damaged. The spaceship is actually rather fragile.
From Earth, on television, you made the repair look easy. Were you due to make a spacewalk anyway?
Yes, we put the repair onto the end of a 6-hour spacewalk. That was to install a new storage container on the space station to which our space shuttle was attached. It was all successful. but I knew that ground control was watching and directing every movement. I couldn't have done it all so effectively without their help.
You weren't alone outside the spacecraft, were you?
My colleague was attached to the outside of the International Space Station in order to watch and encourage me. His words were, "We trained for 4 years, and now you will have to sign autographs for 4 years. You have made space history."
Paul Ryder, the astronaut who made history while repairing Discovery, the space shuttle, while in orbit, give me your autograph. And thank you very much for coming to talk to us.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello and welcome to Science File. Today we are pleased to have astronaut Paul Ryder in the studio. Paul, you've made world history, haven't you?
Yes. I'm known as the astronaut who repaired the space shuttle Discovery while on a spacewalk. I was 223 miles above the Earth at the time, and I performed the first external repairs to a spaceship in orbit from the outside.
I saw you on television. You were in the news headlines.
Yes, I was being watched by a live television audience of millions back on Earth as I carried out the unexpected repairs to our damaged space shuttle. The shuttle was attached to the International Space Station at the time, and our team had been in the middle of carrying out a program of research and experiments in space.
What did you have to do? Were the repairs to the spacecraft very complicated?
Oh, no. I had to extract two pieces of tile, which had been damaged and were hanging loose from the underneath of our spacecraft. If they'd been left in their damaged position, they might have overheated the whole shuttle on re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere.
Did you realise the importance of your spacewalk at the time?
Oh, yes. I knew the implications if I failed, but I tried not to think about that. I concentrated on my mission to repair.
Did you have any help?
My co-pilot helped me from inside the shuttle. He manoeuvred the 50-foot robotic arm, which held me securely in space.
It stopped you from floating away?
It certainly did. I was only outside for 44 minutes, and the actual repair took seconds to carry out. Most of that time was spent getting into the right position underneath the spacecraft. I had to be careful not to touch the spacecraft with my helmet or feet. In fact, the only contact was with my fingers as I extracted the two tiles. One false move, and the delicate tiles which cover the spacecraft could have been damaged. The spaceship is actually rather fragile.
From Earth, on television, you made the repair look easy. Were you due to make a spacewalk anyway?
Yes, we put the repair onto the end of a 6-hour spacewalk. That was to install a new storage container on the space station to which our space shuttle was attached. It was all successful, but I knew that ground control was watching and directing every movement. I couldn't have done it all so effectively without their help.
You weren't alone outside the spacecraft, were you?
My colleague was attached to the outside of the International Space Station in order to watch and encourage me. His words were, "We trained for 4 years, and now you will have to sign autographs for 4 years. You have made space history."
Paul Ryder, the astronaut who made history while repairing Discovery, the space shuttle, while in orbit, give me your autograph. And thank you very much for coming to talk to us.
That is the end of Part 3, Exercise 1. In a moment you will hear Exercise 2. Now look at the questions for exercise 2. Part 3, Exercise 2. Question 10. Listen to the following talk about reading groups and then indicate whether each statement is true or false by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the talk twice.
If book sales statistics are to be believed, more and more people are reading nowadays. What is more, they then discuss the book with others. Reading groups are becoming more and more popular all over the world. Small groups of people meet, often at a library, a cafe, or a bookshop, or maybe in a college or at members' homes. The group agrees on a book to read, perhaps each month or even each week. Any type of book can be chosen, from fiction, biography, drama, essays, or poetry. Ideas on the selected book are then exchanged at the next meeting. Some countries report as many as 50,000 reading groups. These have more than 600,000 members, all of whom have one thing in common: they like reading books. Some of the meetings are run very formally, with a leader, a teacher or librarian, who asks questions and keeps the discussions going, almost like a class. Other groups are completely informal. They meet to talk about a book over lunch or dinner without any apparent chairperson. There is even an online book club now, www.bookgroup.com. This website was set up 2.5 years ago, initially as an online reading group, but it has now become more of an advice centre, providing support to groups across the world. One current feature on the site is about a reading group in Nigeria. Another is about starting a reading group for fathers and sons, to be based in libraries. So, what do the groups actually talk about? They might deal with a summary of the plot or content of the book concerned. Then the group would consider the themes or issues raised by the book. They would look at the message which the author is perhaps trying to promote. The next point for consideration would be the characters in the book and its overall relevance. The meeting could end by agreeing what can actually be learned from reading the particular book. How do you get started? Find a group of like-minded friends or ask at your local library. You could use your own ideas or follow a structured online program of books and discussions. You could even find out about the worldwide radio book club broadcasts by visiting www.internationalradio/bookclub.com. This gives information about the book currently under discussion. It also provides a list of broadcast times and informs you what the next title will be. The listener is also invited to email questions to the author of the book under discussion. Happy reading!
Now you will hear the talk again.
If book sales statistics are to be believed, More and more people are reading nowadays. What is more, they then discuss the book with others. Reading groups are becoming more and more popular all over the world. Small groups of people meet, often at a library, a cafe, or a bookshop, or maybe in a college or at members' homes. The group agrees on a book to read, perhaps each month or even each week. Any type of book can be chosen, from fiction, biography, drama, essays, or poetry. Ideas on the selected book are then exchanged at the next meeting. Some countries report as many as 50,000 reading groups. These have more than 600,000 members, all of whom have one thing in common: they like reading books. Some of the meetings are run very formally, with a leader, a teacher or librarian, who asks questions and keeps the discussions going, almost like a class. Other groups are completely informal. They meet to talk about a book over lunch or dinner without any apparent chairperson. There is even an online book club now, www.bookgroup.com. This website was set up 2.5 years ago, initially as an online reading group, but it has now become more of an advice centre, providing support to groups across the world. One current feature on the site is about a reading group in Nigeria. Another is about starting a reading group for fathers and sons, to be based in libraries. So, what do the groups actually talk about? They might deal with a summary of the plot or content of the book concerned. Then the group would consider the themes or issues raised by the book. They would look at the message which the author is perhaps trying to promote. The next point for consideration would be the characters in the book and its overall relevance. The meeting could end by agreeing what can actually be learned from reading the particular book. How do you get started? Find a group of like-minded friends or ask at your local library. You could use your own ideas or follow a structured online program of books and discussions. You could even find out about the worldwide radio book club broadcasts by visiting www.internationalradio/bookclub.com. This gives information about the book currently under discussion. It also provides a list of broadcast times and informs you what the next title will be. The listener is also invited to email questions to the author of the book under discussion. Happy reading.
That is the end of part 3 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the tape and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, the tape should now be stopped and all papers collected. Thank you, everyone.